And to my knowledge, my video is operational. I can see myself. Okay. I'm going to put it on stop and then start. Are we good? Okay.
Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Johnson, Judge Reyes, Judge Klopaki, the Honorable Matthew E. Johnson presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. This panel of the court today has five cases on its calendar, three of which will be submitted with oral argument and two of which will be submitted without oral argument, solely on the briefs. We are using the Zoom format today for these oral arguments. The first case on the oral argument calendar is case number A21-920, State of Minnesota versus Todd Richard Callis. Counsel, I assume that you're familiar with our standard procedures. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument. Appellant's counsel will have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal. You should be able to see if you have your settings, your screen settings on gallery view or the like, you should be able to see a time clock after we get going, which will show you your remaining available time. Counsel for appellant, you may introduce yourself and your client and begin your argument.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Lauren Campoli. I am representing the appellant, Todd Callis, in this case. I will argue that the district court erred when it denied Mr. Callis's motions to suppress the fruits of an unlawful seizure and the motion to suppress Mr. Callis's statements in response to custodial interrogation without the benefit of a Miranda warning. If either of these motions had been granted by the district court suppressing this evidence, this matter would not have ever proceeded to trial. I'm going to briefly address first, of course, the standard of review. The standard of review is accurately stated in the appellant's brief. When reviewing pretrial orders on motions to suppress, the reviewing court may independently review the facts and determine as a matter of law whether the district court erred in suppressing or not suppressing the evidence. The appellant cites State v. Othude, as well as State v. Storvik, as well as Burge versus the commissioner. The respondent's brief, on the other hand, suggests that the court should use a clearly erroneous test. The respondent's brief is in error. The clearly erroneous test has been specifically rejected by Burge versus commissioner, where a reviewing court is making a purely legal determination on given facts. Your Honors, in this case, the facts of the stop are not in dispute. We are in a situation where Officer Lammers, when she responded to the scene, was wearing a body-worn camera. Now, the respondent indicates to this court that that body-worn camera was not picking up all of the audio. That is false. The body-worn camera was initiated, according to the motions hearing testimony, at the time when Officer Lammers was pulling up in her squad video, in her squad to the Jackpot Junction Casino. And the audio is on from the time she leaves her vehicle till the time she goes into the casino and then continues with the contact of Mr. Callis. We are in a very fortunate position where Your Honors can see the entirety of the stop and the encounter with Mr. Callis. And not only that, Your Honors can see the encounter with the informant, the attendant there at the hotel who was present and provided very little information to Officer Lammers upon her arrival. So a body-worn camera, which has been submitted in the appellant's addendum, shows exactly the stop and the encounter and the information, the state of mind that Officer Lammers had at the time of her stop. Therefore, Your Honors should reject the clearly erroneous test standard of review that the respondent encourages this court to use. The court, on the other hand, should be using an independent review of the facts and determining whether the district court got it right. As a matter of law, whether that evidence should have been suppressed, a de novo review. Furthermore, this has been pretty well stated in Burge versus Commissioner that when we're looking at reasonable suspicion to stop, which is one of the issues that the appellant raises here today, is the first issue the appellant raises, that is a de novo review. So we have a situation of undisputed facts because they were all recorded on video, not only the body camera of Officer Lammers, but also on the surveillance video that was admitted during the motion hearing, as well as during the trial. When you look at those two things, your honors have a very, very clear picture objectively of what the facts are in this case. Now, what happened is the district court erroneously concluded that there was reasonable suspicion based on those uncontested, undisputed facts as shown in the video and the body camera. And so here, the district court erred when it found that Officer Lammers had a reasonable suspicion that Mr. Kalis had committed any criminal act. So
if I could stop you there,
yes.
The standard is not whether he had committed a criminal act.
Right. Correct. I agree. Your honors, that is exactly correct. Is there reasonable, particularized suspicion that Mr. Kalis committed a crime?
No. That's not the standard. The standard is whether or not the officer suspects that the person may be engaging in criminal activity, not that the person actually has committed a crime.
Well, yes, Your Honor. I think you're absolutely right. And maybe I'm not being particular enough with my verbiage. I guess I will cite a United States versus Cortez. A stop is lawful if the officer is able to articulate that she had a particularized and objective basis for suspecting the particular person stopped of criminal activity. So I'm reading that direct from United States versus Cortez at 449 U.S. 411, explaining what the officer needs. She needs some...
Right. And here the officer had been told twice that appellant may have been tampering with vehicles in addition to taking photos of vehicles and told to stop. So that tampering with vehicles... Why isn't that suspected criminal activity?
Your Honor, because she actually didn't have that suspicion at the time she made the stop.
What do you base that on, though? She had been told that twice.
Well, that's what she alleged in the motion hearing. And that's unfortunately not.
Didn't the officer testify at the omnibus hearing that she had been informed by the casino security of that activity?
Yes, Your Honor. But what we see in the trial transcript, no such report was made. We also see
What are you saying?
Your Honor, in the trial transcript. So Mr. Luft was quite cross-examined then, and he did not indicate that he had made a report of motor vehicle tampering. He indicated he made a report of a man in the parking lot.
Not the question about whether he made a report. The question is, did he advise the officer of his concerns?
Well, the officer claimed that was the information she had, but the evidence in the video shows she had no such information at that time. So what I'm saying is that the innocent act of taking pictures in the parking lot was relabeled at the conclusion of this unlawful investigation and unlawful arrest. It was relabeled to be something criminal when it wasn't.
Ms. Campoli, is there any requirement that the officer at the time of the stop and time of the investigation articulate all of the bases for that investigation?
Well, Your Honor, I would hope so, because the basis
What case law supports that proposition?
My go-to here is the Terry, is a Terry stop. So what she's doing is a Terry stop. And so there's only three different kind of encounters that she could engage in. One, consensual. Well, it's not that, because he says immediately, no, I don't want to talk to you. So we're not in a consensual encounter situation. The second, a Terry stop. She's got to have some sort of objective basis. Now, she doesn't have to tell Mr. Kalis what the objective basis is. I agree with you. There's nothing that says, oh, hey, Mr. Kalis, I'm looking for a motor vehicle tampering. But, Your Honors, I suggest that you reject the motor vehicle tampering sort of assertions in their entirety, because there is nothing in the stop of Mr. Kalis that indicates that that was ever a particularized basis in her mind at that moment in time when she stopped him. And what she said to him was, well, I got a report, not of motor vehicle tampering, but of you taking pictures in the parking lot. And she asked him about that. Now, what's important about that, Your Honors, is that she didn't say motor vehicle tampering. She said taking pictures in the parking lot, which was later just labeled something to sound criminal.
Right? But so, Ms. Campoli, it seems like you're ignoring the question that, that Judge Klopaki noted in terms of officer's testimony at the omnibus hearing did indicate that she had been told that it appeared that appellant had been tampering with the vehicle. So that was part, and that occurred prior to the officer questioning appellant. So why isn't that part of it?
Okay. And I agree with you, Your Honors. I think you're free to accept or reject her testimony. I'm urging you to reject it. I don't think that was credible testimony at all. And in fact, that actually wasn't the testimony at the motions hearing, if I recall. She said she had evidence of motor vehicle tampering. Now, let's say you accept that and you say, you know, Ms. Campoli, we're just going to accept that she had evidence of motor vehicle tampering. What is it? She has to provide Your Honors with a particularized basis to suspect Mr. Kalis of actually tampering with that vehicle. So what was it? Was he outstanding by a vehicle? Was he touching it? Did he have some? What was her particularized basis? She has none. And how do we know? We know because what she asked him about was, were you taking pictures of cars? Well, who cares if he was taking pictures of cars? And then he says, well, I don't want to speak to you. He's trying to terminate the encounter. He can't do it. He just can't. She says, you're going to answer my questions or you're going to go to jail. Now, at that moment in time, the respondent concedes the argument. You don't need to read any more than page 6, footnote 3 of the respondent's brief, because he says there, we admit he is seized. Now, when you say that he is seized, that's an arrest that has to be accompanied by probable cause to arrest.
Well, a seizure is different than an arrest, but I want to go back to the earlier point that you point that you asked about as to what was the basis for the information and that we should reject that information. But the problem with that is, first of all, now you're starting to get into findings of fact, and we're just an error reviewing court. We don't make those finding determinations. And you had argued earlier that the findings are not in dispute. So we're accepting what the district court found, and the district court found that the officer had been told of potential tampering with a motor vehicle. And the officer had been told that by the casino security. So this wasn't just a random third party. This was a casino security that had provided that information to Kalis. And all the officer needs at this time is just reasonable suspicion, which is a fairly low threshold to investigate to find out what is going on.
I'd agree with you wholeheartedly, Arnold. And if you're prepared to accept that this report was made, I don't think that it was. The video shows the video shows the facts of the stop. The video shows you her state of mind. Tell me about these pictures, she says. She states—
Well, but the information she got from the security officer was before the videos or the audio started, wasn't it?
No, Your Honors. Unfortunately, that's false information. The respondent's brief, that individual who wrote it did not try this case. I'm not really sure if they listened to the video, but the reality is that there was audio from the time she got out of her car to the interaction with Mr. Luft.
But there's some reason she got to the casino. She must have gotten a call of some kind, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And that is certainly—
And didn't that call include some of this information from the casino security?
Well, Your Honor, that wasn't exactly the testimony at the motions hearing, but that's there for you to see. She at the trial, it was clarified that Mr. Luft hadn't reported a motor vehicle tampering. And then I moved to reconsider the motion hearing testimony after he had testified at the trial. So the court was unwilling to go back and re-engage. But let's just say your honors are completely right. She has reasonable suspicion. All right, let's say she does. Let's say she has reasonable suspicion. But at the time she's got him up against his back up against the wall, right? And she says, tell me this information, or you're going to go to jail. You need to tell me your name or you're going to go to jail. That's an incorrect statement of the law. She has no probable cause to arrest at that point in time. What is her probable cause, right? So she's just going to arrest a guy for nothing? He has given her nothing. So the scope of her stop is limited by what prompted the original intrusion. So her scope is, she says, I'm arrested. He says, for what? And she says, suspicious activity. Now, that's already been decided by this court in State v. Wigan, where the court has said, when you say a driver was acting suspiciously or a suspect was acting suspiciously, that is not a reason to suspect them of criminal, is it not an articulable basis to suspect criminal activity? So she's got to have...
What this officer had was a security report of possible tampering, picture taking out in the lot, and then picture taking inside after he was told not to take pictures. Put that all together, you say that that's not a reasonable, articulable suspicion basis to make an inquiry of what's going on?
Well, I think that maybe, okay, let's say you have reasonable suspicion, but then when you start putting handcuffs on the guy and telling him that he's going to be arrested, then we have a problem that you need probable cause for. So where is the probable cause? You don't have that. Then she continues to interrogate him while he's in handcuffs, asking him what is his, she asks him what's his name. He gives a name. She doesn't know if that's true or false. That's not a probable cause of the false statement. So
don't
she can't
have,
be arrested.
Don't we have case, I mean, you're getting at the second issue of the lack of a Miranda warning, but don't we have case law that says that asking somebody for their identification is not the kind of item that's covered by a... needing a Miranda warning?
Well, one would hope so, Your Honor. But in this case, it was utilized to incriminate Mr. Kalis because that's what formed the basis of the false statement charge. So unfortunately, in this case, it was incriminating. And the case on point is State v. Cripps, where a woman was asked for her identification in a bar simply because the officer was asking a bunch of people for their identification. She provided a false ID. She provided a false name. And the court overturned her conviction because they said there was no particular articulate basis for Ms. Cripps to be stopped in that circumstance and questioned about her name. She provided a false name just as Mr. Kalis had. But again, the inquiry here was, and I would urge the courts to find, she couldn't just enlarge this to a full-blown arrest, which she definitely did at 2 minutes and 22 seconds into it. So everything after that should be suppressed, regardless of whether you find there's reasonable suspicion or not. And I see my time has elapsed, so I want to be respectful of the court's time. And please let me know if I should. I will end here.
Thank you, Ms. Campoli. I have one question, and that is, or maybe to clarify, you are seeking appellate review only of the pretrial ruling, right? Not of the district judge's ruling on your mid-trial motion to reconsider the pretrial ruling?
Well, I had moved to reconsider. There was some ambiguity in my mind as to whether I should be appealing the denial of the motion to reconsider. So it is the same exact issue. And the court was unwilling to go back and reconsider after understanding and having Mr. Luft's cross-examination on the record.
I didn't gather that from your brief that you were challenging the mid-trial ruling, and if I missed it, let me know. But my second clarifying question is, if we're reviewing only the pretrial ruling, would you agree that we're limited to the factual record that was made at the omnibus hearing?
And we
may not consider any testimony given at trial.
I'd agree. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I would.
Thank you.
Yes.
Go ahead if you want to give a full.
I just wanted to say that record did include the body camera and the surveillance video, which taken in toto show an unlawful stop, an unlawful seizure. And then the interrogation while Mr. Kalis is in handcuffs in the back of that squad car for over an hour, still asking about his name. Again, at any point, had the court found an illegality, which it should have, then the false statement would never have been able to be proven. It would have been suppressed because the court also discovered Mr. Kalis's real name by searching his pocket and taking out a credit card that had his name on it. And then the officer continuing to interrogate him while he's in handcuffs, asking, well, okay, are you going to tell me your name now?
You've answered my question. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry.
So you will have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Yes. Thank you.
Counsel for respondent, you may introduce yourself and your client and begin your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Will Lundy. And I am a law student practitioner under the supervision of Special Assistant Redwood County Attorney Travis Smith, and I represent respondent, the state of Minnesota, in this appeal.
And I will note that an order has been issued permitting you to present oral argument in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. And the state respectfully asks this court to affirm appellant's conviction of giving a false name to a peace officer. I want to start, I guess, just by responding to the standard of review issue. In State versus DeLawtonville, which I cited in my brief, the Minnesota Supreme Court says when reviewing a pretrial order on a motion to suppress evidence, it would have said this court, but appellate courts, review the district court's factual findings under a clearly erroneous standard and its legal determinations de novo. That's the standard of review as clearly articulated by the Minnesota Supreme Court. I don't know where appellant is coming up with the idea that this court reviews facts on a pretrial motion de novo, but that is what State versus DeLawtonville says. And with that, I want to move on. In the interest of keeping simple matters simple, we could go down into the details of reasonable articulable suspicion, but appellant makes two arguments. The first one obviously is a Fourth Amendment argument. The second one is a Fifth Amendment argument. And as to the Fourth Amendment argument, and I don't concede that there was not reasonable articulable suspicion. I want to make that clear. But even if there wasn't reasonable articulable suspicion, the Minnesota Supreme Court and this court have held that it is well settled that even when police conduct an illegal arrest, and this wasn't an arrest at the time, I'm sure Ms. Campoli would like to disagree with that, but even if it was an arrest, it is well settled that when police conduct an illegal arrest or search, evidence of a crime committed in response is not suppressed as a fruit of the prior illegality. That's City of St. Louis Park versus Berg, and there the Minnesota Supreme Court cites this court's a decision in State versus Combs for that proposition. So even if Officer Lammers did act unlawfully when detaining appellant, the Fourth Amendment does not demand suppression of the statement. And then as to appellant's Fifth Amendment Miranda claim, Officer Lammers asked appellant to tell him or to tell her his name. And a Miranda warning is, of course, only required when a person is subjected to custodial interrogation. Interrogation, in turn, means that police questions or conduct that are reasonably likely to elicit an incriminating response. And the Minnesota Supreme Court has explicitly held that asking a person to identify himself is not testimony that is protected by the Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination, and therefore appellant's Fifth Amendment claim fails. And I rely on State versus Evans for that argument. I cited Evans in my brief. And the upshot of Evans was that there was the defendant was making an ineffective assistance of counsel claim, and the appellant said that his trial attorney had been ineffective for failing to raise the Miranda issue, and the Supreme Court said that his trial attorney was not ineffective because again, simply asking for a defendant's name is not going to elicit an incriminating response, and it's not covered by the Fifth Amendment. And I do want to respond to Ms. Campoli's argument about Cripps. And, you know, first of all, Cripps is a Fourth Amendment issue primarily, where asking for this person's identification was that was the act that constituted the seizure there. And then, and then secondly, the officers were looking for incriminating information in that case. So they were looking to see if this person was underage, and it didn't have anything to do with her name. It had everything to do with her age. The defendant in that case was an underage person drinking at a bar, and the police went in and they basically were looking for people who looked young, and they saw that this person looked young, and they asked her for her ID, and the court simply decided that wasn't enough to constitute reasonable suspicion of criminal activity, because, you know, there's people look young and they may still be of legal age to drink in a bar, and they said they needed something more than that. So that's really Cripps. I don't think Cripps stands in contrast to Berg or Combs. It doesn't stand in contrast to Evans, rather, that asking for a person's name is not, it's not testimony protected by the Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination. So at this point, I'm willing to entertain any questions that the court might have, but frankly, I think those two arguments are sufficient to resolve this case. The state would respectfully ask this court to affirm appellant's convictions, and I'm prepared to cede the remainder of my time unless you have questions.
Are you suggesting that the court should assume that there was no reasonable suspicion and go straight to the issue about whether the exclusionary rule applies?
I don't think that's necessary, Your Honor. I mean, it's appellant has raised these issues, and I would rely on the arguments that I made in my brief. I would agree with the court that first of all, that appellant is not challenging the mid-trial ruling. We're talking about the pre-trial hearing, and so we are left with the pre-trial record as it is. So I think it would be eminently appropriate and reasonable to address the arguments that appellant is making as regards reasonable articulable suspicion. But I do think that the argument that even if you were to grant that what she did was illegal, suppression is still not the remedy. Again, because the evidence of a crime committed in response to an illegal arrest or detention is not suppressed. So I think that's dispositive of the case, but it would be a good thing to address these other issues as well.
The Berg case, City of St. Louis Park v. Berg, that's a civil case, not a criminal case, right? Why does that apply in this case?
Go to Berg. No, the City of St. Louis Park is not a civil case. It is a criminal case. The defendant was charged with a gross misdemeanor count of obstruction of legal process. So it is criminal.
Okay. Well, what crime was the, in this case, what crime was the officer aware of at the time that she seized the defendant, the appellant?
So I'm going to go to her testimony at the omnibus hearing, and she said that security was reporting a suspicious male. This is a direct quote. Security was reporting a suspicious male who was taking pictures in their parking lot, appeared to be tampering with a motor vehicle, and was refusing to follow their direction to stop taking photos. That was her testimony. The court, in its finding of fact number five in the omnibus order, said the district court, in that finding, the court found that Mr. Luft told Officer Lammers that appellant had been taking photos of vehicles and that there were reports of vehicle tampering. And in fact, when you look at the officer's actual report, she says that she was told when she went to respond, she had been told that someone had been tampering with a motor vehicle. So, what dispatch told Officer Lammers or what Luft told dispatch. You know, those are things that we were relying on Lammers' testimony for and that the district court found to be credible. And so I would say, you know, first of all, tampering with, go ahead.
Well, maybe you're getting to the answer, but I guess, so what is the crime? What is the criminal offense? I mean, if we look at the record and objectively, what criminal offense is supported by those facts?
The criminal offense obviously is tampering with a motor vehicle. That's what she went there to investigate. But again, even innocent conduct is not, even innocent conduct may support reasonable articulable suspicion. And here, I think the security guards were, they were distressed enough about Mr. Kalis's actions, taking pictures in the parking lot. Why was he doing that? And then refusing to stop taking pictures when asked to stop taking pictures. You know, why was he doing that? And they were disturbed enough by that to call the police and ask for further investigation and for further assistance. And so even if Ms. Campoli's assertions about, you know, this idea that Lammers didn't know anything about tampering with a motor vehicle, that's a complete lie, absolutely fabricated. It never came up. That doesn't come out until later. And we're kind of ex post facto trying to justify what happened here. Reasonable articulable suspicion, we're talking about something that, the police need only show that the stop was not the product of whim, caprice, or idle curiosity. And here we have, Lambert, the security guard specifically asked for an officer to come and talk to appellant. And so if the Fourth Amendment is about reasonableness, it was reasonable for Officer Lammers to come and talk to appellant just to see what was going on. And the other thing, too, is that the Supreme Court has recognized that evasive behavior is a pertinent factor in determining reasonable suspicion. And, you know, when you look at the video, you look at the transcript of the video, when Officer Lammers approaches appellant, he and her initial approach was polite. She said, please. She said, you know, would you please talk to me? And he says, no, I don't want to. And then he starts walking away. And she says, you know, I want you to talk to me. And he keeps walking away and keeps walking away. And he's acting evasively. And that by itself may provide another reason to suspect criminal behavior, such that by itself would justify detaining him and saying, I think Ms. Campoli is probably correct that the actual detention happens at 2 minutes and 22 seconds. It's going to be right in there somewhere where she says, stop, you're not going anywhere. I'm going to talk to you. So I think all of those things add up to reasonable articulable suspicion.
It appears there are no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Lundy.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Campoli, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will take that. The respondent's argument and even the brief fall short of really addressing the two issues that are interrelated here. Of course, the one is reasonable suspicion. It seems from Your Honor's questions that perhaps Your Honors are convinced that there was reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. However, the officer took it beyond that, and she went straight to a seizure at 2 minutes and 22 seconds. And this is how she explains it. Okay, she gets Mr. Kayla squared up with his back against the wall. He's unarmed. She is 3 feet from him with a duty arm, a duty weapon. And she says, okay, I got called out here for some suspicious activity. Okay. Somebody's taking pictures of cars out in the parking lot, taking pictures of employees. Okay. Is this stuff something that you've been doing? And he replies, I don't think so. Now, at that point in time, she does not ask him anything else. He has an absolute right to terminate the encounter. He should, but he doesn't. Because the officer keeps him there. And she says, well, why are you lying to me? Tell me the truth. And he said, I'm not lying. I'm trying to go up to my room. Now, at that point in time, he is seized. He is arrested. You need probable cause for that. So tell me, Your Honors, what is the probable cause at that moment in time for him to continue to be detained against his will? Now, no reasonable person in that situation that Mr. Kalis was in would feel free to leave in that circumstance. State v. Flowers, very simply, he's in custody. He's done. He can't leave. He's not allowed to go to his room. And she keeps interrogating him about what is going on here. Now, when she does this interrogation, it doesn't pan out. So the scope of the original intrusion has ended. She has no more legal justification to keep him there because she didn't get new probable cause or reasonable suspicion of an additional crime. She had nothing. She asked him about what she was investigating, and she told it in her own plain words. She never used that label, motor vehicle tampering. Again, I urge you to reject the label. Look at the objective facts present in the record. That's what I'm asking this court to do and what this court can and should do. It's objective right there. No one ever used that verbiage. And you can tell that that was something that was added way, way, way after the fact when the case was charged out almost 30 days later. And these folks had an opportunity to fix a little bit of these problems legally with this stop in this case. And so we know that because when Officer Lammers, a younger, more inexperienced officer, communicates with her male colleagues out in the parking lot while Mr. Kalis has his hands behind his back in the squad car, clearly, I mean, undisputedly in custody there, where was the Miranda there? Well, it never happened. But okay, she's telling those cover officers what happened. At no point in time does she indicate her particularized suspicion that she had any of motor vehicle theft. So again, this is just a label of that this officer put on innocent conduct because she had to have a way to try to justify the original intrusion. But she can't do it. And even if your officers say that, even if your honor say, okay, Ms. Gampoli, we're going to give her the reasonable suspicion. Okay. But then what about the arrest? The problem
you just mentioned motor vehicle theft. There's no charge of motor vehicle theft. There's no indication that she believed motor vehicle theft. I thought the issue was tampering. What are the elements of tampering? They're not the same as theft.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm sorry. Tampering. I'm sorry. Yes, I misspoke there. I'm sorry about that. Yes, it wasn't vehicle theft. It was tampering. But my point is, Your Honor, that's just some label of criminal conduct that there was no particularized basis even of that. But let's just say Your Honors are going to go.
What are the elements of tampering?
That a person, I, you know what, Your Honor, I don't know it off the top of my head. But he wasn't accused of that. He wasn't charged with that. No evidence of that was found. And she didn't indicate to her cover officer she was ever investigating that. You look at 2.5 hours of surveillance. There's nothing to indicate Mr. Kalis ever even approached a vehicle and tampered with it. There's none of that. Yes. Okay. Maybe Your Honors find it's offensive. He took some pictures. There isn't even evidence he took any pictures. He offered the phone to Officer Lammers to look at. I mean, this is an innocent person who said, here, look at my phone. I didn't take any photographs. You're thinking I did this. I didn't. And so then you find this very weird situation where he is charged with false statement because she got him up against the wall. She knew he didn't want to talk to him, and she did not let him terminate the encounter, which is what he had a right to do. So he was arrested. He was arrested at 2:22, and everything after that moment in time should have absolutely been suppressed under the State v. Cripps line of cases. Cripps is, again, the officer is asking for her identification. That officer has no particularized basis that that young lady committed a crime. And the respondent is incorrect. The officer didn't testify at the hearing in Cripps that there was that she looked young. The officer just said, well, I was stopping a bunch of people. Yeah, it was a younger crowd. But that is not the reason why she stopped Cripps. There was no reason why she stopped Cripps and was doing these checks on people's identification. And then she gave a false ID. So there is also no law in the state of Minnesota, as the officer erroneously told Mr. Kalis, that you have to identify yourself to an officer. You do not have to do that in the state of Minnesota. There is no law on point. There was nothing.
Ms. Campoli, your time has expired. You may sum up.
Okay. So, Your Honors, I do ask you to go beyond the issue of reasonable suspicion here because that doesn't end the inquiry. The inquiry is, then what? Then what? He was arrested. He was put, force was used against him. He was handcuffed, and he was further interrogated about his name, which formed the basis of the charge of false statement. by that officer without a Miranda warning. I mean, it also bears mentioning that he was searched, his pockets were searched without probable cause as well. Because what crime was that? What crime allowed the officer to put her hand in his pocket? Clearly not a weapon, right? We're way beyond a Terry stop at that point. And so, Your Honor, that is the illegality, and absolutely suppression is appropriate. And I ask Your Honors to overturn the ruling of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Campoli. Thank you to both.